Blog Talk Radio.
Delacroix.
A youth and youth, they have a plan, and have some ambition. I make sure who no firm in a the Yama Gideon. So when you soon become a man, him know that where you stand. Him know him Pupa said it, so him follow tradition. If Marcus Garvey said be read, then where come on a pray? Can knowledge of the key and it's me set the people free. And I highly high philosophy, it's African unity. Who no want just segregation and social impurity. The race is not just for the swift, but those who can endure. Make sure you have a steady footing in a Zion door, and keep your thoughts secure. The love is for the poor, but some little boy I bought some gun, them mama can't afford. If just the blood will run, then danger will be done. The heaven and the earth will pass away before him word will come. But if it rises without a cause, there will be no reward. For you to enter Zion gates because you are a fraud.
For the youth in the struggle, fighting guerrilla warfare. Ah, ah, hey. Somalia to Ethiopia, from Egypt to Zimbabwe. Ah, ah,
hey. I listen as they say a war. If Cola is a scar, if one from every nation can come live up on a bar. So don't care who you are, there's a brighter morning star. It's shining, wake the town and tell the people near and far. You seek and you research, with science and research. The flesh it is the temple and the temple is the church. And it's the last, it's every work. So awesome on alert, don't fix up on them corners. I like rubbish, sheep and dirt. I listen, last it, say I want respect for every man. Look here the race, look here the color, not the religion. So make a decision, be born the division. Cause each and every rasta youth be transformed in the nation.
From Portmore to Kingston, from Kingston to Mantico Bay. See you to Riverton, come on 100 Parkland. From Jungle to Ream, from Tevele to Matthews Lane. Southside to Tel Aviv, from Iraq to USA. From Waterhouse to Jerusalem, Greenland to Delacroix.
I got to explain to you also your soul, your needs, your political desires and needs, because that is Huey's soul. When we first organized the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, Huey said, Bobby, he says, we're going to draw up a basic platform, just basic, that black people can read. He says, we don't want to go real elaborate with all these essays and dissertations and all this stuff, because the brother gonna look at that and he say, man, I ain't got time for that. I gotta go see what I can do for myself. It's just a basic platform that the mothers who struggle hard to raise us, that the fathers who worked hard, that the young brothers in school who come out of school semi-illiterate. You say, we want freedom, we want power to determine the destiny of our black community, full employment for our people. Number three, we want housing fit, decent housing fit for shelter of human beings. Number four, we want all black men to be exempt from military service. Number five, we want decent education for our black people in our community that teaches us the true nature of this decadent racist society. and to teach black people and our young black brothers and sisters their place in society, because if they don't know their place in society and in the world, they can't relate to anything else. Number six, we want an end to the robbery by the white racist businessmen of black people and black people in their communities. Number seven, we want an immediate end to police brutality and murder of black people. Number eight, we want all black men held in county, state, federal jails and prisons to be released because they have not had a fair trial, because they've been tried by all white juries, and that's just like being tried in Germany being a Jew. We want black people, number nine, when brought to trial, to be tried by members of their peers. And a peer being one who comes from the same economic, social, religious, historical, and racial background. If the United States government and the courts and the local courts did this, they would have to choose black people from the black community to sit up on the jury. They'd have to choose some of their mothers who've been working 20 years in Miss Ann's kitchen scrubbing floors like my mother done. They have to choose some of them hard-working fathers. They have to choose some of those brothers who stand on the block out there wondering where they're going to get a gig. They're going to have to choose these black people. And number 10, he would say, let's just summarize it. We want housing, we want clothing, we want education, we want justice, and we want peace. This is a basic platform. In case you never knew it or not, of all the things that you've heard in the press, of all the derogatory statements that's been made in the press about Brother Huey P. Newton and I, of all these derogatory statements to guide you away from seeing this basic platform that Huey was talking about for his own people. We have to learn to look through the white press. We have to learn to see what's going on. Now, out of this platform, Huey P. Newton realized that it was necessary for us to start working on these points, these 10 points, practically. Remember number seven? We want an immediate end to police brutality and murder of black people. This is very, very important. And here, whether you know it or not, is where you start dealing with the black revolution. When Huey says, every black man put a shotgun in your home. And once we let the man know, say, look, we armed from block to block, and we're going to patrol you from our windows. And we're not going to have you brutalizing none of our people in the streets. Do you realize what kind of power black people have then? Because you begin to neutralize that police force, because them cops going to start riding shaky and scared. In fact, we're in a position then to demand that they withdraw from our community, because they occupy our community just like a foreign troop occupies territory. Very important to understand. We hate cops beating black people over their heads and murdering them. That's what we hate. If you got enough energy to sit down and hate a white person just because of the color of his skin, you wasted a lot of energy. You better take that same energy and put it in some motion out there and start dealing with those oppressive conditions, and you're going to find out just what you hate and what you're going to stop. We are organizing to stop racism. You dig it? When you stop racism, you stop brutality and murder of black people by the racist occupying army in our black community. That's what we're going to stop. What's being done to us? You dig it? Can you dig the white power structure and this racist police force and how they've escalated the situation? That before Watts, there was 1,300 cops. Now there's 6,000 cops patrolling black people. That in Oakland, they had 350 cops. Just 3.5 years ago, now they got 1,000 cops patrolling black people. San Francisco's double its police force, and every area, major metropolis where black people live all across this country, they've doubled, tripled, and quadrupled their police force, equipped them with tanks, all kinds. We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Yo, turn this motherfucking shit up. and I did not end up here from bad karma off of B-ball, selling mad crack or rapping. Peter Tosh tried to tell us what happened. He was saying if you black, then you African. So they had to kill him and make him a villain, cause he was teaching the children. I feel him, Dunn was trying to drop us a real gem. That's why we bucking holes in the ceiling when we hearing I'm an African.
Scientists have found chemical traces consistent with a bomb or a missile on a piece of wreckage. Police using clubs and tear gas against demonstrators.
So-and-so and a white fascist. Like they said, you're getting some of your own medicine.
Then the rest will fall behind. Tell me who's got control of your mind, your worldview. Is it the news or the movie you taking your girl to? Know what I'm saying, cause Uncle Sam got a plan. If you examine what they telling us, then you will understand what they planting in the seeds of the next generation. Feeding our children miseducation. No one knows if there's UFOs or any life on Mars, or what they doing when they up in the stars. Because I don't believe a word of what the president said. He's filling our heads with lies, got us hypnotized when he be speaking in cold words about crime and poverty, drugs, welfare, prisons, guns, and robbery. It really means us. There's no excuse for the slander, but what's good for the group is still good for the gander, see.
I don't believe Bob Marley died from cancer. 31 years ago, I would have been a panther. They killed you because they knew we had the answer. The views that you see in the news is propaganda. I don't want no computer chip in my arm. I don't wanna die by a nuclear bomb. I say we all rush the Pentagon. Pull out guns and grab the intercom. My first words would be, I believe man made God. Out of ignorance and fear, if God made man, then why the hell would he put us here? I thought he supposed to be the all-loving, the same God who let Hitler put the Jews in the ovens. We don't fall for the regular shit. They try to feed us all this half-ass leadership, flipping position. They turn politician and shut the hell up and follow tradition. Boy, your TV screen is telling lies to your vision. Every channel got some brainwashed cop shit to watch. Running up in niggas' cribs claiming that they earned shots. It's a plot. But Buster, can you tell me who's greedier? Big corporations, the pigs or the media? Sign of the time, terrorism on the rise. Commercial airplanes falling out the skies like flies. Make me wonder what secrets went down with Ron Brown, who burned the churches to the ground with no evidence found. It's not coincidence. There's been too many steady incidents. It could have been the Klan who put that bomb at the Olympics, but it probably was the FBI. Deep at the core, cause if they make us all panic, they can start martial law. I don't believe Bob Marley died from cancer. 31 years ago, I would have been a panther. They killed you because they knew we had the answer. The views that you see in the news is propaganda. I don't believe Bob Marley died from cancer. 31 years ago, I would have been a panther. You killed Huey because you knew we had the answer. The views that you see in the news is motherfucking propaganda.
NBC, FBI, CIA, ATF, KKK, IRS, TNT, CBS, NBC.
Great love and a great understanding, and that we try to extend this to the general black population and also people, oppressed people all over the world. And I think that we differ from some other groups simply because we understand the system better than most groups understand the system. And with this realization, we attempted to form a strong political base based in the community with the only strength that we have, and that's the strength of a potentially destructive force if we don't get freedom.
RBGs. Know what I mean? It's war. Know what I mean? Yo, Stick. I mean, you should be real on
war.
The block. Pigs be out there, occupied army. RBGs, it's a takeover, not a makeover. Yeah. The cops stop you just because you black, that's war. Run you through the system for your prince, that's war. When they call my hood a drug zone, that's war. Slumlord charging you for rent, that's war. Why they so rich and we poor, that's war. If you young and black, you sell crack, that's war. The White House is the rock house, that's war. George Bush coming out his mouth, that's war. Chilling on the corner with your gang, that's war. Popo do the same damn thing, that's war. When they murdered Amadou Diallo, that's war. Marching in the streets is a strategy of war. Knowing self-defense is a strategy of war. Soldiers try to link with other soldiers in the war. Revolutionaries got to know the art of war. War, what about hip-hop? Use that. Matter of fact, fuck a rap battle. What about a gap battle? Let's take it to the beast and see which cat tattle. Is it kids versus fiends or P versus hoes? What about y'all real niggas against the 5-0? This is M1, DP, don't you forget. Cause you can talk, 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 but that don't mean shit. I ain't gotta pop your top to see where your brains went. This rap shit is way bigger than entertainment. It's the people versus the pigs when it all go down. It's not pop versus big, it's who's getting the power. And power ain't money, dog, it's self-determination. Like taking hot and making it the real people station, that's war. Know what I mean? Yeah. Rap war, whatever war. You live a fast life, more or less, more so, it's still war. Dead prayers, the people radio. Yeah. Get down, get down, get down. RBGZ, biatch.
You are now listening to WRBG, the people's radio. It's a takeover, not a makeover.
We always say the Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to us. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am the people. I'm not the pig. You've got to make a distinction. And the people are going to have to attack the pig. The people are going to have to stand up against the pig. That's what the Panthers are doing. That's what the Panthers are doing all over the world.
Fred.
All right. Am I on? Because I can't hear anybody. Sounds like we're having technical difficulties again. Something we used to, if anybody can hear me, sister and brother, My phone was hung up, as a matter of fact. I got the same, you know, the thing that you hear on the end where it says, you know, thanks for, you know, listening to Blog Talk Radio, and then it ends. So I'm back on, but I can't hear you, Sister Harmony, if you're trying to speak or whatever. You know, we've played the music and stuff, but so we appear to be having some problems. It is what it is. I can try to hang up and call right back. So I'll be right back in a second. Okay, can you hear me? Maybe you can hear me, but I can't hear you. I can't hear anything. And types of shenanigans that's being performed right now. We don't believe that this is a coincidence, that this is taking place at all. There are certain forces that, you know, have the technological capability to dislodge phone calls, intercept phone calls, scramble phone calls. And for a reason, you know, for a reason. But just want to point that out. So the ability to interrupt the communications here, as far as, you know, one being able to hear on one end from the receiver as opposed to me being heard. And, I can be heard, from what I understand, on the show. So tonight's show, we're going to talk about the medical industrial complex. And the show must go on. We're not perturbed over this. We're not going to be, you know, put off or discourage anything. And we want those who are listening to understand that anytime a black man or a black woman learns things that are not taught to us in general, or goes into the what is perceived as the unorthodox, you know, can understand some things, penetrate the system of things for what it is, and learn to put it in a way, you know, to one's people. In this case, the so-called black population in America, the still displaced descendants of Africans who were brought here violently against their will, torn from their root, separated from the umbilical cord, and brought here to this part of the world, and made to be the cash cow, so to speak, you know, the SOL, the source of labor, fully exploited with no residual returns. And upon being so-called emancipated, the inherited legacy of mental and psychological slavery, you know, has lingered on. It was never consistently derailed to where we can create a new black man and a new black woman, even in this part of the world. And of course, various forces, various branches, and tentacles or arms of the state. And what is the state? Once again, we define as the politician, the businessman, the judge, and the police. It's not a personal, emotionally charged rant. It is what it is. It's a fact. This is no mirage. you know, the historical relationship between the state and black people, specifically black and brown people, being so-called non-whites in general, and even the poor whites who had their class contradictions with their fellow rich white brethren, who steer the machine, who are the stakeholders of the machine, who are the proprietors of the machine, the state machinery, in the guise of the so-called corporations and companies. And by definition, that is fascism. A small handful of people referred to as an oligarchy. You can look that term up and take a look at it for yourself and look at the structure of things today and see that a small handful of rich whites are controlling the system with so-called invested power. And so this arm of the state, referred to as the medical industrial complex, is something that actually derived about 1969-1970. These two white, you know, Caucasian investigators who obviously had begun to develop some form of dislike or what have you of the nature of things back then, and having taken a look at the medical world, the world of medicine, and they were able to publish literature on that. And so that is how the term or phrase or label, the medical industrial complex, derived. Basically, you can say the medical industrial complex centers around health providers, drugs, and that nature, you know, insurance, what have you. And so it's many facets of it itself, you know, operating along the same lines of the military-industrial complex. They have a strategic relationship for a reason. The history of the medical-industrial complex and the providing of pharmaceuticals on the behalf of what's referred to as the pharmaceutical companies that today most of us, many of us, some of us, if not all of us, as of late, may know as what's called Big Pharma. You know? But these the medical industrial complex is composed of a cartel of corporations who have accumulated large sums of money, cash, or wealth, whatever you want to refer to it as, and their basic idea, ideology, their plans that they have been put in motion, and it's growing more fascist by the minute to the extreme. A sort of, you know, an apex of fascism, so to speak, in the medical industrial complex, to use private finance to basically monopolize medicine and healthcare, of course, being in cahoots with the insurance companies, who is you know, an associate, the medical industrial complex. And this is the part of the reason why the average so-called American can't afford health insurance.
And so these token gestures on the part of the recent presidents who have come along, the Europeans seized the time to label this thing as Obamacare. Some see it as an erosion of the republic in favor of socialism. But let's get something straight here, very clear. We want to be very clear. And by the way, you know, I'm your, you know, I'm the host, In Defense of the People's Radio, Chairman Nat Turner, the People's Political Party, for the record, going on record. But let's be very clear on this, this disdain for socialism. The pharmaceutical companies, of course, you know, strictly about the almighty dollar. This is why the pharmaceutical companies and corporations are anti-socialists. Under a socialist economy, healthcare and education is so-called free. And this is the real reason why the corporations hate socialism. Of course, socialism is not a necessarily new thing. It may be known in modern day times as socialism, but it has been around since the ancient days in certain regions of the world and countries of the world, and indigenous people whom Karl Marx and Frederick Engels studied. And they studied what was referred to as the gens, the clans, the fraternities, if you will, amongst the tribes, that you belong to the Bear Clan, this sister belonged to the Fox Clan, and so forth. And these were highly regarded, and so therefore it was a unit, a unified political economy. And that is what Karl Marx and Frederick Engels dug out and understood and just repackaged it as socialism. Now, this may be hard for some to believe, but we know that this is fact, and that African people, indigenous people, wasn't not only in Africa, but in Asia, the Pacific Islands, and what is now referred to as America, just here sitting idle, twiddling our thumbs, didn't have any type of brain power or intellectual capacity or the ability to think and form a political economy. The Europeans have given us nothing. If anything they've given us, they've given us hell. And this is where we at today. And this is being said for a reason. And of course, there are things, these things are all interconnected and they're linked up together. You know, but I just wanted to clear that up. Again, you know, the system of capitalism and the medical industrial complex is venom towards a socialist economy. The other way you can look at it is at points in like the across the country where you have local treatment. You know, many of us, or some of us may be, you know, old enough to remember, you know, local, what the Black Panther Party was doing, you know, centers, you know, where people can go and receive some type of health care, medical treatment. And today, due to the cartel nature of medical corporations, the pharmaceutical companies, which is why they're referring to them as big pharma, no different than what the banking industry has happened in the banking industry, no different than what has happened in the media world, where years ago, you know, Europeans owned, you know, they had newspapers, local newspapers, you know, around the country, you know, the free press. And over time, the cartel, major media cartels, gobbled those up. And they used, you know, various tactics and strategies to get smaller newspapers to fold, create panics, which made those local newspapers go under. And this is what they refer to as buyouts, you know, or as mergers. And, of course, there was supposed to be these antitrust laws that were put in place, you know, to protect the, you know, the little guy, you know, the moms and pop stores are similar like what Walmart has done. You know, there's been these very radical militant protests and fights against Walmart coming in the cities, and particularly there's no coincidence with these rural areas, you know, with majority white populations and stuff. But so it's a similar to what those sectors of the state have done. And so the medical industrial complex, you know, these monopolizing medicine, therefore monopolizing medicine, which means monopolizing and placing intellectual property rights on so-called discoveries, patents that deal with certain types of, let's say, even a plant in particularly in the subcontinent of India that the indigenous black and brown people in India had been using for thousands of years for what's referred to as herbal healing, herbal remedies. And so the corporations and the companies setting themselves up under such cartels, international cartels as NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and setting up these international laws amongst themselves, and placing the laws in place to where it would leave them a strategic advantage over the so-called poorer countries, which is what they refer to as the third world or on the periphery. So whenever you see these media pundits, talking heads, referring to the periphery, they're using these subtle terms, these, you know, coded language. It's no different than when they say in urban communities, disadvantaged children. So we say what they're meaning. They're meaning black and brown children, urban communities, with the Black Panther Party correctly identified as occupied colonies. You know, as we heard Bobby Seale going over the 10-point platform program, the Black Panther Party, which we believe is still relevant today, and that we don't have to reinvent the wheel. The blueprint was laid down, and that, yes, in today's modern days and times, they naturally will be some innovations. The higher we go in our political understanding, then the higher we elevate, and so therefore, you know, additions to the blueprint. No different than when they started out with a pair of Nikes and then ended up with today's space age Nikes that you see in these, you know, sporting goods stores. And so placing a monopoly on the plants. This is, of course, done to, let's say, handcuff, you know, to push back against what is referred to as herbal medicine treatment, which has been actually found, you know, more times than not among indigenous black and brown people. And so this is the cartel that people are facing today. So many people have been victimized by these by the, you know, the medical cartel, who have lost their lives to the various forms of cancer. People are basically you know, led to believe you know, that cancer and AIDS and leukemia for instance, have nothing to do with each other. But when you take a look at it, you see that they're all T-cell destroyers. Leukemia is just simply a word from the, I believe, Latin, Greek, or what have you, which simply means white. And so, therefore, a white T-cell destroyer, this is why it's referred to as leukemia. And so AIDS is a T-cell destroyer. Okay. The vaccines, what we're talking about here today, and we're going to get more into that. But, you know, just trying to, you know, paint a picture to give a good idea of the direction that we're heading, and hopefully we can cover some ground and raise the people's consciousness through this radio show. When you look at the major companies or these institutes, let's for instance, let's say, you know, if you turn your television on in the morning, I believe it is CNBC, and you know, that's the Wall Street Channel. And so if you look at the bottom of the screen, you know, you see the names going at the bottom of the screen, and you see an arrow that points up, which means it's in the green, and an arrow that points down, which means it's in the red. And of course you can see you know, the stock, the share prices for that day, and of course it's in constant flux, right? So one of the companies, one of the pharmaceutical companies that you will see at the bottom of that screen would be Merck. I'm not too sure if it's still Merck Sharp and Dohme, but there was a conglomeration on their part, a merger. Okay, Merck would probably be the most widely known of these pharmaceutical companies within the medical industrial complex. Now, you know, when you look at Merck, you take Merck for an example. First of all, Merck is named after a man named George W. Merck, who had been around in the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s, you know, in his heyday. And George W. Merck sat on an advisory panel for Franklin Roosevelt at the time. And so at this moment in time, you know, the state, again, as I said in the beginning, you know, the military industrial complex and the medical industrial complex, they operate along the same lines, you know, the same protocol, the same ideology. One provides, you know, juice for the machine that the other uses to destroy, you know, to give you an idea of what we're talking about here. But during that period, you know, this thing with World War I, World War II, with more specifically World War II, you know, but anyway, in the 40s, so Roosevelt and, you know, of course, higher ups, you know, more unseen forces, Roosevelt is no more, no less than window dressing. He's just the one, he's the face of it. These are higher forces, unseen forces that operate. And so they had come up with the type of thinking, the diabolical thinking for such things as biological warfare. Now, chemical warfare and biological warfare are the two present things that black and brown people, not only here in America, but around the world are facing, you know. But so this was the, the level of thought or the thinking during that period, during that time. And so Merck was one of the advisors, you see. And so this is the man whose name that you still see, you know, Merck Pharmaceuticals Day. Now, what's interesting about George W. Merck is that, you know, connecting the dots, you know, connecting the dots here, we may, you know, kind of, you know, jump around a little bit, you know, back and forth, you know, just trying to connect these dots and stuff like that, because I think, you know, interrelated and stuff. But anyway, when you think about the medicines, even I believe, to understand that Merck, you know, providing the implants, the breast implants, you know. But as far as like, you know, these medicines and stuff, and particularly in the area of vaccines, now these so-called viruses, you know, these sicknesses or what have you, are supposed to be the reason why that they're working, you know, day in, day out, around the clock, you know, trying to, you know, come up with vaccines to protect, you know, the world populations and all that stuff and whatnot, you know. It can only be true to a certain extent. But when you start taking into consideration the population and start looking at it specifically, you will see a pattern here. Okay, so during the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s, you see these medical experiments in certain labs around the country. One particular lab that comes to mind is located in Fort Detrick, Maryland, and of course this is a, you know, Army institute. Okay, but there were these experiments, these studies that were being conducted, and of course, you know, these things had to be financed and funded. And so when you look at the, you know, the record you use, the Freedom of Information Act, there's an excellent book called Emerging Viruses, written by Leonard Horowitz. Last name is Horowitz, for those of you who may be interested. Leonard Horowitz, Emerging Virus. Okay, Emerging Viruses. And using the Freedom of Information Act, he was able to retrieve these medical experiments and tests and conducting these different types of whatnots in these labs. And so when you look and you see the nature of the experiment, I keep saying experience for some reason, but anyway, the nature of the experiments, the doctors' names, and of course, you know, the funder. And so you look there, you see Merck, you know, Merck. You see, and the reason why I'm going here has something to do with the so-called evolution of the vaccines from the medical industrial complex to so-called treat people with HIV. Okay, and we're told that HIV is the pre-stage to AIDS. But however, we're also told that you can live with HIV and somehow, some kind of way, live a healthy life. Now, I don't know what disease or virus is supposed to came out of the jungle that does that, because they don't discriminate. They don't cut this group of persons some slack and go after them and say, hey, you know, well, y'all, you know, just that and other. They don't do that. That has to be done mechanically. That has to be done artificially. You see, and we're going to get to that. But anyway, one of these doctors that whose name you see in these experiments is one Robert Gallo in these experiments. Now, these leukemia-like viruses, these AIDS-like viruses, cancer-like viruses is what they were in possession of. So they had already had knowledge of AIDS and what it could do. You see, that's what's called a cell culture, where they take live cells, right, and they put them in the controlled environment in the cell culture, then take specific types of killing agents and dump them into the cell culture and sit and watch it through a microscope to see, you know, the reaction to it. And so this knowledge was already understood by them. It was already understood. And so here you have 20 years in advance, at least 20 years in advance, probably more, but we'll say 20 to be on the safe side. And so all of a sudden in around 1980, 81, the people in this country are told through the medical journals, like the Black Panther Party and any other group that's serious about raising the people's conscious level, having, you know, proper propaganda, you know, the right information and to be able to distribute it to the people, you see. And so the medical industrial complex has this media wing, you know, which is this journalism. And there's a number of online journals that you can go in and look and read and find all of this stuff. And of course, you know, the old saying, you know, if you want to hide something from a nigga, you put it in a book and stick it in a library. You see. But anyway, here you have somebody who was already in advance of this type of knowledge. And next thing you know, he just comes out of nowhere. And Dr. Robert Gallo is the man who discovered AIDS around 80, 81. Okay, nobody's realizing what has taken place. And so it was only fitting that he would discover the AIDS virus. Now, you know, willing to go out on a limb here. You know, just make the statement that if you know, this information can be, you know, disentangled or what have you, you know, feel free. That's all I'm saying. But again, this is no some conspiracy theories, conspiracy fact is what it is. So it's only fitting that he is introduced as the one who discovered AIDS, you know, here in the American corporate control media. Now, the funny part about that is this, that there's another so-called virologist or whatever you want to call him, epidemiologist, right, named Luc Montagnier, who was French. He was the actual discoverer. So they even went to court over who would be the discoverer of it. Reason why? Because it was worth a lot of money. And, of course, eventually what would be a result of this medicine would end up being in the hands of somebody who would have the patent on it, the intellectual property rights to it. And so that's the whole getup about when you go to the doctor, you know, you feeling sick or whatever, you know, you got a cold or flu or whatever, you know, it don't really occur to people that, you know, they're asking you when you go in or you want to take it, do you want to take an AIDS test? No, I got the flu, man. Got no damn AIDS. So the whole purpose is even some of these doctors, you know, in these hospitals, if you take a look, even the physicians, the doctors have shares in the company that produces it, that produces, you know, the medicine, right? One kind of Lisa Rice, and come to find out, her and the rest of the Cheney gang, the Bush Cheney gang, if not all of them, had hundreds and thousands of shares in these companies, in these corporations. You see? And this is what it's about. This is the medical industrial complex. You see? So we're covering one part of it. We're covering one part of it. We got an hour left. How are we gonna, if we have any callers, obviously, I don't know if I'll be able to hear. If we have any calls, anybody, want to, chime in, question, comment, press that one and, you'll get into the queue and be able to, get on and stuff. I just want to state that, right? But I don't know whether some kind of way we'll do it. But in the meantime, I'll keep running my mouth. Okay, so you look at it from the viewpoint of, so here you have the discoverer of AIDS, and then, you know, like I said, you know, because the patents are worth a whole lot of money here. Now, that's just to give you an idea of how it worked. In essence, if there's some white people complaining about, you know, the medical industrial complex, and of course the poor whites are not able to afford it, and so of course they're looking for some savior, and of course their savior has arrived. you know, in the name of Donald Trump, you see. And so this is a sign of the times. The writing is on the wall for those ignorant whites, of course, you know, using fear tactics and stuff, you know. And, of course, you know, have the, you know, these white Aryan neo-Nazi right-wing, you know, white militias or what have you, also exploiting the so-called disaffected whites and stuff in this political realm of cat and mouse between the Democrats and the Republicans, while black and brown people's caught in the middle of the shit, you know, and need to just move out of the way and let them fight it out, and then we should fight the winner. Okay. So the next thing I want to make sure I talk about also, like I said, you know, these are various forms of cancer. And we don't believe that these are natural forms of cancer, because if that's the case, and nature is not that cold, because nature is also our nature can kick ass, and nature can also heal you at the same time. And so this is what we understand. So such branches on in these, let's see, these national institutes or what have you, such as the World Health Organization, the National Institute of Health, who have their so-called power and ability to determine which vaccines are supposed to get out around the world, and how many and how much. And of course, naturally, then the Europeans, as always, when it comes to, like I say, to the periphery and the third world, this vaccine by so-and-so, Johnson & Johnson, where it disproportionately reaches, you know, Africa, and disproportionately, and you know, the good whites come along, and they go and try to push for some reform and try to get the bad whites to turn loose some of the vaccine so more and more people around the world can have it, because this COVID, so-and-so, it doesn't discriminate, and we're going to get to that too. But if you look at the history of WHO and the National Institute of Health, these vaccine programs in Africa, has been made to be the scapegoat for all the most dangerous viruses and diseases, even West Nile, you know, a whole lot of shit. But Africa has been made to be the scapegoat of the origin of AIDS. Now, in general, and because of the people's lack of understanding that one does not necessarily have to have a PhD in medicine to understand normal and natural things that occur and take place, that a little investigation on your own will bear fruits of your labor. And so one of these fruits of my labor appears, to my understanding, you know, taking a look at this shit in Africa with this AIDS thing, many of us may not have heard of this little monkey called, it's a Barrett monkey. It's a little old, small little monkey called a Barrett monkey, and I think it's supposed to be something for the word green, the green monkey or something like that. Well, anyway, we're told that AIDS originated out of the heart of Africa among these green monkeys, these Barrett monkeys, and that was relayed to the human population, and then the next thing you know, it ends up in America. Now, here's the problem, and I presented this problem at the time, and I have to laugh here. You know, they tell us that we have our state elected officials up there, you know, at the crack house, you know, that a lot of people know as the White House. But here's this story about this monkey. Now, when the AIDS virus first hit and became popular in media right out of the gate, it was said to be a gay disease. And if those of us who are old enough to remember that, but it was said to be a gay disease. And this is in the 80s. And of course, the great Dr. Robert Gallo, who came along and discovered and figured the shit out, with his genes and everything and whatnot. Now, it appears to be a great problem here, which a natural mind could not rationalize, but other than seeing some discrepancies. And what I mean by that is this. In the cities of Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago, there was these series of vaccine trials that was supposedly supposed to take place. Well, not take place because it did take place, but supposedly because of hepatitis B within the gay male population. And there's these vaccine trials in Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, and I think San Francisco may have been another one of the cities. Now, after these vaccine trials had taken place, they had kept the records, and we're not talking about some, this image when you see persons or whatever. We're talking about, the record showed that, these gay males had some of them were college grads and whatnot, stuff like that. So it wasn't this interesting thing when people get this image about some vaccine where they're trying it on, these persons who didn't make it past ninth grade. No, not necessarily. But anyway, now it's rather strange that when you look at the record, and then you start seeing these blotches, these noticing and changing in the skin complexion. Europeans have a real bad look, in pale skinned people. Okay, so here's Gallo and his discovery, and all of a sudden they start rounding, people start coming in, talking about they was feeling particular ways and shit like that. They had pneumonia, what have you, the so-called symptoms. Now, they went to tracing back these first cases, and lo and behold, what a coincidence that, and this is for the record, lo and behold, what a coincidence, they just so happened to have been the same guys who had taken place on hepatitis B vaccine trials previous in the 70s. Okay, now that had to be a extraordinary coincidence, but here's the problem here. If this virus, and they had to keep changing the name, that HDLV and HDLV1, HDLV2, so it had to keep adjusting the name, right? So if this virus began in Africa, in the heart of Africa, like in the Congo, then the nearest people around these monkeys that they're talking about, you don't have to take my word for it, but the nearest people around these monkeys is the so-called pygmies. Now, anybody who understands demographics of Africa knows that the pygmy are basically an isolated group. Okay, basically. They're basically an isolated group. So how did this virus jump from Central Africa? The nearest people to this monkey is the pygmies, and it ended up in Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, and San Francisco. And then here you see these first cases of AIDS, and this is why they was calling it a gay disease. And the overwhelming majority of these first AIDS victims were white gay males who were previously healthy before the vaccine trials. So how could a disease jump from Africa, leapfrog clean over the rest of the other people, and just end up only among white gay males? If it was a heterosexual disease in its origin, then how could it only end up a bunch of white gay males? So see, that's the first sign right there that really struck my attention. Doing the homework like they do. They're doing homework right now. You see, so I had written a letter, to the so-called senator at the time, I believe whose name was John Brewer or something like that, what have you. This is before Hurricane America. And so Hurricane America hit, you know, by the way, you know, Hurricane America, we understand, is in generally known as Hurricane Katrina. But so, you know, the hurricane, of course, you know, it threw, you know, things, you know, into whack, you know, instead of out of whack, into whack, you see. And so, but a while later, it may have been a year or so, somewhere around there, I received the letter. He had said he had forwarded this letter to the head of the, I think, the National Institute, some white woman named Nancy Gerberding. This is a white woman that they would put on television, you know, whenever they want to talk about vaccines and whatnot, stuff like. So she's like the authority. She's being, you know, projected on to the populace as this authority on vaccines and the progress and the war against AIDS and all that kind of shit, right? Well, her reply was to me, you know, I'm spending so much time, you know, worrying about how it started when I should be trying to, you know, use the time to help fight against it. And, you know, that's the old strategy, the old tactic, you know, it's a strategy. What is that strategy where the art of deflection, and pretty much what it was. But I noticed she had sent I got another letter. And along with this letter, her attempt to convince me of the origin of AIDS out of Africa. And so she had retrieved a copy out of one of the science journals. And in this copy, there's a picture that was taken, and you see, like, two hands, two black hands, with a knife, and a wooden block, and you see like what looked like meat or what have you, or carcass or something like that on this block. So what it was, she's trying to convince me that this is how these Africans started catching AIDS, because they were, you know, eating the monkeys as a delicatessen, you see. So the nearest and closest people to them is like I said, the so-called pig. Okay, but so here you have some people in the so-called tropics, you know, even in it, by their own standards, you know, their own racist definitions and labeling as primitives, you know, pagans, primitives, and what have you, you know, polytheists, you know. The uncivilized, you know, as opposed from, you know, the civilized world. And that's the trick. That's the whole catch to it, you know, to get you to believe that bullshit, you see. But she could not answer my question. I put the question to her. She could not respond to the question. She had no rebuttal to, you know, the fact that I pointed out how disease, you know, the first, what I'm saying, by law of nature, a huge bulk of the first cases of AIDS should have been found in the ghetto, should have been found in the hood, in the neighborhood. What are the chances that some heterosexual, so Africans who caught a plane, went to the Caribbean, and the shit jumped from the Caribbean and ended up in a white gay male population? It should have been some heterosexual men and women that should have been in those first cases of AIDS victims in this country. But because of the type of brainwashing and social engineering by the World Health Organization and the National Institute of Health and also the National Cancer Institute, but chances is, few of us or a minority of us were able to get past them and do our own independent research and in their own records, in their own science, in their own journals. And there have been several white investigators. I think his last name is Duesberg, Duesberg, something like that. He was one of the first ones. He was pointing out these discrepancies. There's another smaller book that was written. It's a smaller book, and I think AIDS and the Doctors of Death, something like that. You know, a smaller book. There was a movie called And the Band Played On. I think it was a book written by Randy Schultz or something like that. But they had made a movie, and so these were the propaganda movies, or you know, using these individuals as authorities to get the people to think in the opposite direction. His book is the title of the book is AIDS and the Doctors of Death. Dr. Alan Cantwell, Jr., MD, an inquiry into the origin of the AIDS epidemic. And so he documents very carefully, you know, the vaccine trials and the early players in the game. And of course, you know, the biological warfare, program that's being carried out, okay, against the so-called undesirables of America. And in certain instances, these are the gay population of America, the history of episodes between the pigs and the gay population on the West Coast, where they had a big riot, a big clash. Harvey Milk at the time, who was come out and said he was gay or what have you, or you know, it was known that he was, you know, homosexual. And Harvey Milk was like the Jimmy Hoffa of his time, and Harvey Milk was assassinated and touched off I'm talking about a literal, you know, riot, you know, on the West Coast, you know. So there's a history. The doctors, the physicians who had partaken into these vaccine trials was a so-called Russian defector whose name escapes me at the present moment. But how is it that a Russian defector just jumps right into the helm and leads these vaccine trials? And so the political ramifications behind that is that this Russian defector, when they were in when he, you know, have some of the whites put their, you know, their sons and daughters in these boarding schools, where they had selected these private schools, boarding schools, Catholic, like Oriental boarding schools, where it comes to find out that this same Russian defector had a roommate. He had a roommate who later became the Pope. And of course, these connecting the dots sort of thing, you know, that had, you know, that had been, you know, figured out, you know, after such a prolonged period of time of you know, of careful consideration and thought. So we know that as a part of the program against catalyzing black and brown people, which is now a lucrative business on the part of so-called big pharma and those who produce the so-called HIV vaccines that you that have been on television lately, you know this marketing, and there's no coincidence at all that you all have seen the commercial where they showed the young brother with the braids, the long braided, like, you know, and they show where he works at and this and whatnot, and then they show you another commercial where they show, I'm not sure if it's AstraZeneca, but it's somewhere in there. But anyway, what you see, they also film two black men kissing, like they're sitting, you know, out at the beach or something like that, whatever. So this is no coincidence. You know, the commercials are very subtle. When I first saw the commercial, it just struck, it just stood out. It was obvious. It was very obvious. You know, but you know, we say each one teach one. You see, so this is no coincidence. So you make the face, you know, of America. You know, the subtle things about imagery and stuff around the world. You see, moving from there. As I say, we talked about the World Health Organization, the National Institute of Health. By the way, you know, there's these series of vaccine programs that we take. But I mentioned there's the polio vaccine, these cases by Ebola And of course, like I said, Africa has always been made to be, the place of origin. But this is no these institutes, these people have been in Africa since the 60s, way early in the game. You see, a virologist named Hilary Koprowski. You can look him up. Hillary, Clinton's wife, but just with one L, and Koprowski, that's Koprowski. It's basically Koprow and Ski, which makes up his last name. And this was a Polish doctor, in his heyday in the, the 50s and the 60s. This is the same man who is given credit for the polio virus vaccine, the oral treatment, for polio, you see. There's maps that you can look at wherever who has been, in Africa. And you see this proliferation of these viruses and whatnot across the continent. Sudan is one of the countries that has been hit the hardest. And of course, it's no coincidence because Sudan is also one of the countries in Africa that have the largest families. Sudan is if not the number one country, where they have large families, they have 10, 12 children in the family, so you look at Sudan, has been hard hit, these operations in Sudan. And of course, like I said, the medical industrial complex and the military industrial complex are go hand in glove, you see. And of course, that takes you off into what is referred to as proxy wars. The international policy or ideological framework was referred to as destabilization for the simple fact to confiscate that country's natural resources using various strategies and tactics, such as was referred to as structural adjustment programs. SAP for short, SAP someone's economy. So like I said, they go hand in glove with it. Let me say this about the, this monkey, this green monkey. To my understanding, yes, this monkey has, a particular type of virus, where the pygmies should have been wiped out for some reason. They have not been wiped out. To my understanding, that this simian monkey virus is not a T cell destroyer, so something would have had to be added to it. You see, and so come to find out, Gallo, Robert Gallo, this Dr. Robert Gallo, had been also employed or working on the contract with the National Cancer Institute. And what the National Cancer Institute was doing back then, it was also experimenting with this so-called simian monkey virus, trying to replicate them, you see. As to have an idea of whether or not a medicine or a vaccine could break it, you see. And this is, again, this is part of the medical industrial complex. You have what's referred to as the Wistar Institute. Wistar Institute is it's just like the letter W and I and the word for star, as we say, star in the sky. And this is the institute that Hilary Koprowski had worked under, when he was doing his thing. You know what I'm saying? And so and see who else here. There's also, of course, you have to take in, the Food and Drug Administration. The Food and Drug Administration, of course, these are the people who supposedly give the thumbs up, the go ahead, the seal, the stamp of approval for a medicine to be so-called legally sold for profit to the general populace. Now, the FDA is also the same branch. Sort of just like the IRS, When they take out their personal vendettas against a so-called dissident who we may be as people's political party on their list. You know, realistically speaking. But this is not said for anybody, you know, to be shaking in the knees. It just simply means that we, the people's political party, must be doing something right. You know, but anyway, you know, the FDA, these are the people who go after those who have for years have, you know, used herbal treatment without the drugs. And of course, these drugs, these chemicals with these side effects. You know, when you see the commercial there, that they put it in small writing at the bottom. And then, of course, the person is trained to speak real fast, you know, the voiceover for the commercial. So he's trained to speak real fast and tell you the list of things that this drug may cause. You know, it may, you know, possibly cause a heart attack or what have you, you know, a whole host of things. You know, you're taking the drug to get rid of one thing to catch five other viruses, five other diseases, you know, five other sicknesses. You see, and so this is known by the FDA. And so the FDA being in cahoots with the pharmaceutical companies up there at the crack house. And so they allow the advantages of these oligarchical corporations, these fascist pigs, to operate. And, of course, they send their goons in to, you know, ransack your shit, raid your shit, take all your medical research. You know, all your various electronic equipments and shut down your clinic, which is the word I was trying to, come up with when we was talking about, you know, around the country at the time, you know, local clinics where people can go and, you know, and be treated. Well, anyway, that's, you know, the Food and Drug Administration. You know, they're a mob, they're a legalized fucking mob who has that power to do that. And there's been a number of cases where they've gone after, and in some cases, these you know, practitioners, you know, have been white. You know, maybe one or two of them formerly worked, you know, at some of these pharmaceutical companies. You know, and so they had a track record, you know, of healing people who had various forms of cancer, and which may sound very difficult, you know, to the average lay man and lay woman, or to the average Joe and Joanne. There was a matter of, there was a former employee at one of the pharmaceutical companies. I think it may have been Merck, but anyway, what I remember is, you know, she was a former employee, and at some point in time, she could no longer sleep. You know, knowing that she was part of a medical cartel that had been behind, you know, the autism. And so she started speaking out against it, started, you know, going around the country and speaking, and then she became a target. She had one or two very frightening experiences at her own home. One time she said she had, you know, left, you know, to speak out of state, wherever, and came back. She said she lives in a, of course, you know, she lives in a fluent community, what have you, and stuff. She has this, you know, so-called sophisticated alarm system, whatever. Well, anyway, somebody managed to get in her, you know, onto her property, and she has a pool in the back, so there's this table. And so she goes out to the pool, and she sees a duck sitting on a table. You know, and so it frightened. I mean, she don't remember, you know, buying no duck for no decoration or whatever, stuff like that. She said she saw the duck, she thought it was strange. You know, and of course she began at some point, took a few ticks to realize that the language that the duck what was a, you know, subliminal message for, you a sitting duck. you know, because it was one of those sitting ducks. And another time, so she had got her, you know, security system changed, you know, upgraded, what have you, whatnot, guy come, whatever. She, you know, she leaves again, comes back, you know, some other point in time after the first incident, she comes back, and she says she has this Buddha statue, you know, for those, you know, who know the Buddhas, you sit in what's referred to as the lotus position that some of us may understand as the Indian, sitting Indian style, where there's these Buddha statues that, you know, have gotten famous around the world, and a lot of whites have, you know, taken, you know, to those statues. And so she says she come home, she go in her living room or area or something like that, whatever, and, you know, she had the Buddha statue on the table. And so this time when she come home, she goes and then she sees that the Buddha statue is on the floor. You know, so this is the type of, you know, games or psychological warfare, you know, that she's been experiencing, or because she, you know, she trying to educate the American public, basically saying when your newborn is born, do not allow, you know, you have the right of refusal to the shot that they give the child. And so that's been documented, you know, so this vaccine sort of thing. And, you know, some of this may be far out, you know, for those of us, it may not be your normal orthodox show. You get on here and talk about, you know, the great medicine and, you know, that you take medicine for, you know, what have you. I mean, you know, we're all addicted to drugs somehow, some kind of way, shape, or form. You know, but we're talking about the sinister side of it. We're talking about the side that rarely gets talked about to our people from the so-called leadership. And, you know, this is a takeover, not a makeover. You know, and we want to be very clear on it. I should mention, of course, is Bill Gates. Bill Gates and the financing of the medical industrial complex. You know, he's had this obsession with Africa, and there's these things referred to as TED Talks that they do, you know, invite certain speakers or have a big, huge crowd or audience or whatever. And so you can see Bill Gates literally sitting down and they being interviewed about medicine and vaccines and, you know, trying to help the poorer countries and all this kind of shit. Now, he's not talking about Europe. He's talking about the so-called poorer countries. Every time he talks about the poorer countries, you know, and trying to help. And then he literally comes out of his own mouth and says, yeah, and by so-and-so year, we can literally slow the population down, literally out of his own mouth. And so, you know, he's a Malthusian. He's, you know, this is a white man who lived, you know, 100 some 200 years ago, what have you, named Thomas Malthus. I've mentioned him, you know, once before, who developed a theory about overpopulation. And so what are the strategies, the tactics, you know, to slow it down, you know, to reduce it. One of the things that he had definitely said, that one of the things that could be done was war, famine, you know, and so disease, we believe, was added to it. And George Bush and the rest of the gang, one Henry Kissinger was a Malthusian. Henry Kissinger himself, through Memorandum 200, for those of you who may be interested in this document, you know, you can, if it's still accessible, you know, for the state's international policy towards Africa, you know, a policy of genocide through destabilization. Destabilization can be of various forms of things. We understand that these are viruses and diseases that have been unleashed on Africa. There was a going hypothesis that Hillary Koprowski's vaccine had unleashed the AIDS virus in Africa. Now, as of late, there's been, you know, some articles, some papers written, some scientific studies, you know, and those who have praised Hillary Koprowski, who lived to, I think he was like 96 years old. And so he lived well into modern times. And there are those who now claim that this hypothesis has been refuted and what have you. But the strange part about that is wherever Dr. Hilary Koprowski had went, you know, right after that, you see these viruses, you know, popping up in the places, you know, in and around where Koprowski was operating. And of course, you know, through who? You know, the National Institute of Health. I mean, you know, the National Cancer Institute. These are the medical cartels that move out and supposedly, you know, have some concern about affordable medicine around the world. I want to add this too, right quick. But we you know, a little bit more Bill Gates too, but I want to add this. When you go into the supermarkets or the stores and you buy Oscar Mayer products, if you look on the ingredient, you know, part of the package, you will see what we refer to as nitrite. And this is sodium nitrite. Now, at first glance, it would look like when you go buy the can powder lemonade, you know, when you make some lemonade, it looks like powder lemonade, like that comes in the can, you know. So this is the substance that's produced by certain companies, and they provide sodium nitrite to the pharmaceutical industry. You see, so if you never really realized, understood why a pack of Oscar Mayer wieners, you know, they have this dark pinkish color, verging on red, you know, this is what gives us this color, the nitrite. And so forth, you know, the bologna, you know, stuff like that, this pinkish, dark pink version of red color, the, you know, the Oscar Mayer products. The investigators whose responsibility it is to list dangerous substances, what have you, there's a list. It comes out periodically. Sodium nitrite was added to this list of what's referred to as carcinogens, therefore cancer-causing agencies. You see, and so there was a this team, her name escapes, but anyway, there was this this lady that worked in the industry that was their responsibility. So after her investigation, she had concluded about the, you know, the nitrite and the cancer. And so instead of the FDA and the government banning nitrite from being used in the foods, and particularly the Oscar Mayer, I mean, you have to know who Oscar Mayer is. I mean, you know, Mayer, the last name. Okay, well, anyway, instead of the FDA banning the nitrite, they went after the lady. Okay, they went after the lady. NBC, of course, owned by the same forces, you know, the same forces, had done a, you know, these morning shows that come on. And so what they did was they orchestrated a demonstration with a hot dog. And so here, you know, the guy sitting there, what have you, just like the other ones used to sit on there in the morning, what have you, you know. Well, anyway, he sits there and he has all the stuff that he needs on the table. So he takes a bun, he takes a hot dog, and then he has some mustard. And he just goes into this little thing. Well, who's to say it's not the mustard? Who's to say, you know that's causing? Whether he realized it or not, he just gave it away right there. I mean, you know, the attempt was to try to, you know, punch the air out of the bag. You know, that was one of the attempts that they used to go after her, and anybody else who, was bringing attention to it through the journalism. Then they hired their own so-called, scientists to whip up some stores to go and look into all her writings and try to find the slightest thing to discredit her, you see. And so this same company that produces it also supplies it to the pharmaceutical industry. And so the FDA covers for them through legislation up at the crack house. And, of course, you know, these lobbyists who lobby for these pharmaceutical companies. And some of these politicians, whether they're jackasses or elephants, it doesn't matter, receive their campaign contributions. And this is how the people can really understand that, especially black people, you know, black people are under this impression that the Democrats are somehow our friends, you know, these liberal Democrats who are our friends because they had unleashed one of our elders, hero elders, political prisoner that this country refuses to acknowledge. And so we say don't fall for the okey-doke. We say don't believe the hype. Like Flavor Flav had wrote in one of the songs on Public Enemy's album, "It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back." You see, and so their attempts to protect the corporation rather than protecting its own citizens, while claiming at the same time a rocket man in North Korea is you know, a dictator, making the claim that Chavez in Venezuela was a dictator, making the claim in Bolivia that Evo Morales was a dictator, and that the successor Chavez in Venezuela is a dictator. Saddam was a dictator. Gaddafi was a dictator. I mean, Ahmadinejad was a dictator, but they couldn't get rid of him because he outsmarted all of them. You see? And so this is the whole get-up around the world, you know, with this shit, of course. Again, the World Health Organization. Now, let's see what else we have. By the way, in 69, 1969 was a crucial year, a very crucial year for some reason. There was a matter of fact, several books, the little small, you know, books that you could stick in your back pocket, was published, and the title of these books is "Chemical and Biological Warfare," one of the books is written by Seymour Hersh. And Seymour Hersh over the years has written numerous books to expose, you know, the state, its mechanisms and whatnot and so forth. And inside these books, very well researched, and you see the institute, the labs, where they're in these labs, you know, supposedly coming up with medicines and vaccines and whatnot, you know, on behalf of the military, you know, through that biological campaign that, you know, Roosevelt back in the 40s, you know, had met with these leading persons of industry, you see. And so these are the same players who initiated it, and the ones who are keeping it going today. Also, if you've ever been given morphine, morphine is basically liquid heroin, and heroin, of course, derives from the opium, the poppy. The poppy, in particularly places like India, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and these wars that have been carried out in those same regions, contrary to what most people believe or are led to believe through the corporate controlled media, no more, no less than the war of attrition to keep the drug trade flowing The Taliban have been made to be the, you know, the scapegoat, the bad guys. But if you take a look at the track record of the Taliban, you will see that when the Taliban had been in power, for some reason, the opium trade had been low. And for some reason that when the CIA and this, the international pigs referred to it as the army, you see the takeovers of these and the installation of their puppet leaders placed in these regions, in these countries. If not, they're turned over to the cartels, to the international wing of the so-called gangs, or tribe, or tribal sectors, or factions in these countries. And so you see this chart where the opium trade is high. You see, and so this is a commodity for exchange on the Wall Street trade, and of course having the patent, the intellectual property rights to the morphine. You see, and so it's a legal form of drug addiction, and for those of us who have been given morphine, we know what it do. It's just like getting high, you know. And so that's how deep it went, but I wanted to make sure that I was able to get that in, you know. And like I said, the opium trade, as a matter of fact, has been a lucrative business for what is referred to as the Anglo-American establishment. You know what I'm saying? An Anglo-American establishment no more than Great Britain and the United Snakes of America combined as the Anglo-American stat. Anglo is just simply, you know, what's referred to as WASP, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, which, of course, you know, that's religious affiliated. You have the Catholics, the Protestants, and, of course, the subdivisions of the Protestants, I think, is the largest faction is the Presbyterianism, something like that. But, you know, so from the opium to morphine to a monopoly, a patent, and into your body, of course, supposedly treating you, you know, for the various pains or what or whatnot and what have you and stuff like that. Now, this last thing, you know, just dealing with this COVID, we see COVID as no more, no less than a than the present, the latest round of biological war against black and brown people around the world. And this is a fact. Yes, it is a conspiracy, and it is a conspiracy fact. And any one of them, Anderson Cooper, what have you, we can sit them at the table and we can put, you know, the facts right before them. Now, all this Dr. Fauci shit and all this kind of stuff, one of the Kennedys has written a book on Fauci. It's some very, very informative information on Fauci's history, and of course, some of that has come out. Rand Paul's son, this other woman politician, her name's on tip my tongue, can't get her name out, but they were saying that both of them was crazy, you know, and that they were when they had Fauci, you know, up in front of the committee and all this kind of, and Fauci, of course, they're trained in the art of deflection with these responses and stuff. But in the early stages, you see countries like India, China, South Africa, and Brazil, and Russia in the early stages of this outbreak. And these were the top countries. Okay, now, I don't believe that these were the top countries by coincidence. And the reason why I say that is because these are the same countries that got together and formed what's referred to as BRICS. It's just without the K. And that each one is a letter of the name of the country. And so they had got together and formed a currency that would challenge the euro and, of course, the American dollar. And so this, what this saying is, in essence, that these countries have sought to come out from the Anglo-American hegemony by being dominated by the American dollar, because what's referred to as the Bretton Woods Act, up and around near the ending of so-called World War II. They met in Bretton Woods and they set up a system to where the trade on the international trade market, that the U.S. dollar would be the standard currency of trade. And so in essence, that literally meant that they handcuffed the rest of the world to the American dollar. And this shit you see in Russia and the thing that's going on with Russia and China together is part of what's referred to as BRICS. And this is why the gas and everything else is going skyrocket high. Not because Putin somehow, some kind of way, doing some shit that none of the rest of them haven't done. America has done it, and Britain has done it. Now, they may have done it in their own different ways, you see. But in the early stages, this COVID virus, this man-made virus put out, and these are the top countries. Now, out of those top countries, you see India and China has the world's largest populations of non-whites. And that is not a coincidence. Now, the thing with India is India used natural herbal healing medicine that has been in their possession for at least 1,000 years. Or 2,000 years, 1,500, 2,000 years, a little over 2,000 years. As a matter of fact, there's these Indian, what Europeans would refer to, you know, as holy books, you know, the Bible and whatnot and all these kind of things. What white Jewish people would refer to as the Talmud, you know, there are different books, you know, the Kabbalah, where the Indian population have been in possession of these books for thousands of years, written in Sanskrit, and these remedies for the things that we now see today. Now, the people in India always prepare themselves for the influenza every year, you know, the influenza season. So they prepare themselves every year. And so some of us now may have this in our cabin. What is the one that, it escapes my mind. It'll come to me. But anyway, you know, they were able to practice using, you know, the indigenous plants, you know, that would produce the various things that could fight against influenza. And so over the years, you know, a number of other things, battling cancer, diabetes, arthritis. And of course, this is why secretly, a lot of rich whites traveled to India who were stricken with these ailments and stuff, you know, and they come back cured. But India, out of all the countries on the earth, we got a couple of minutes left, but India, out of all the countries of the earth, had the fastest turnaround COVID-19 cases, India and China. Now, what is the difference? The Europeans will never tell you in their various forms of media how they done it. They'll just simply say it's an amazing thing, and they'll have you thinking all this other kind of stuff. Now, the Indians were, some of these medicines, some of these things had come from India, from China, Cuba, these are the enemy countries politically on the international stage. You see, of course, you know, we're familiar with certain medicine that we understand that deals with the COVID, that some of us know as interferon, okay? Something, of course, the government would never back, you know, unless they can have the monopoly on it and get all the money, you see? But I wanted to bring that up, and again, we see that COVID is just the latest attempt, depopulation program that's been carried out, you know, by the Anglo-American establishment, targeting particularly black and brown people, after having been told some shit about overpopulation and enough food to go around and production and such kind of stuff. So this is why, you know, we are under attack, And part of that attack is the medical industrial complex, which goes hand in glove with the military industrial complex. And on that note, we just want to say, y'all can still hear me, we made it through this here. Tune in next time, 7 p.m. Central Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, for another show of the Independence of the People Radio. I'm your host, Brother Nat Turner, National Chairman of People's Political Party. You know, the ones and twos is our Minister of Communication, Sister Amina, and my co-host, Minister of Defense, Brother Mother Lane. You know what I'm saying? So on that note, we say all power to the people, black power in particular, and your whole rule, which simply means freedom. But without liberation, we can't have it.
Uhuru, sisters and brothers, the first thing I want to say is that I love you. And the second thing I want to say is that we can win. We will win our liberation. And in order to win our liberation, we have got to think positively. We have got to believe that we can win. And if we don't believe that we can win, we're whipped. Before we start, we've got to realize what dangers exist, and we've got to look at those dangers realistically. We can't afford to have a subjective, distorted, irrational fear. We've got to look at the obstacles to our liberation coolly and clearly, and to develop ways to get rid of those for us to struggle. For us to fight for our liberation and for our nation.